You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
So, what do safety hazards on public transport look like for queer people?
So, for queer folks, you've got all the same hazards that everyone who rides public transport looks at with additional layers. Because queer folks can be read as that in public life, that can mean people are targeting them for challenging gender norms, for being out with a partner that doesn't fit binary or heterosexual norms. It can mean for trans folks, challenging those gender norms, maybe having a voice that is not expected, and just basically for living our authentic selves, being out on public transport, it can mean that we're targeted for different reasons that are driven by transphobia, homophobia, those rigid gender norms, all the isms on top of what's there already.
So what inspired you to start the study and focus on this issue?
Well, the first study that I did on bystanders looked gathered input from women in general, and I found that there seemed to be also some differences coming from my participants in that study who identified as part of the rainbow community, but I didn't quite have enough information to really dig into that. So the next study I designed, I wanted to specifically do it within the community and be as inclusive about that as possible, because I found that there's not actually a lot of information out there about the experiences of the rainbow community of harassment and other forms of violence on public transport. And so this was an attempt to help fill some of that data gap and therefore help public transport authorities and professionals make better informed decisions about the programs that they design.
Within your findings, is there a time period, for example, on weekends or certain times of year where the violence is found to be worse?
I can't say that in a quantitative way, because this was a qualitative study, but as is probably not surprising, participants did talk about generally feeling a lot less comfortable during darker hours, during the nighttime. And there was also kind of a two sides of the same coin conversation around Pride Month, where it was nice to see a bit of like visual support for the rainbow community, but also this kind of sense of unease that it might make folks just a bit more aware of it, and folks that are triggered by that sort of thing more likely to actually target people during Pride Month. So it's all contextual, but there are some patterns there.
In your study, you have analyzed how marginalized communities are more at risk of violence, especially queer communities. Yet responses usually do not focus on these communities. What would a response focused on rainbow riders look like?
Yeah, well, one of the things that I think was so amazing to hear from my participants is that the queer community is very trained or very experienced at looking at bigger pictures and looking at more layered approaches. So it's not just that we need to respond to making sure that we see representation in the posters or the communications that go out that very clearly communicate that protections include the queer community and everyone, but also that it's not just lip service. So we talked about this systematic approach, this community-based, so that there's this shared responsibility for safety around it. And I thought that was something, I found that was really unique in the conversations around this, of this shared responsibility, not just only these are the things that public transport agencies need to do, which is true, but also what we can bring as riders and as a community to be able to look out for each other and create an environment where it's harassment that's not welcomed on transport, not people who are typically marginalized by society. We want to welcome those folks on public transport.
So that was part of the active bystander approach, I believe, that you'd mentioned in your study, trying to get other riders, I guess, to show more solidarity. How do you think we can encourage the solidarity in action from other passengers?
Yeah, well, I think it definitely has to come from not only the community, but there has to be public transport authority tools in place first. So I'm never going to tell someone to put themselves in harm's way, but the public transport authority, if there are ways to report incidences as they're happening, that is one way. You can be an active bystander without actually getting actively involved, but there that pathway has to be in place. There's also ways to have more resources like transport staff available on hand, and help buttons, and then the staff to have training as well. So inclusive service training and de-escalation. And then once those are in place, then there's also an avenue to provide more information about how passengers and riders can step in without putting themselves, again, in harm's way. That's indirect approaches like causing distractions or going up and talking to the person who's being harassed, ignoring the perpetrator so you're not escalating anything, or just stepping in between a situation to block that line of sight often can just diffuse something that's starting to escalate. But that all requires first assessing the situation for danger and to assess what you feel comfortable doing as well. And that might just mean recording what's going on so that you can have an account of it to provide after the fact, or checking in with the person after the fact if it was something that happened quickly.
So I'm guessing that's part of the systems level approach. At the same time, work from the community itself as well as from the public transport agency.
Yeah, absolutely. That sort of shared responsibility where the public transport authority is saying, these are the things that we provide for you. These are safety tools. We're also going to get you from point A to point B. We've got your back. We understand that these things happen. We're going to take them seriously. And we also expect this type of behavior from you. And if we see that that is breached, we're going to come up, back up and enforce it in kind of a tiered way. Like, obviously, if it's not everything demands like kicking someone off the system or calling in police, but like handling things in a step up sort of way.
Is there more violence on public transport compared to, let's say, just on the street in the evening?
In general, like, I don't have the like quantitative data to say that specifically, especially specifically here in Auckland. But in general, what we see on public transport is just reflective of the risks that you see outside. So I would say that it's not more risky to be on public transport. Now, it's just a slightly different situation, because if you're out on the street, for instance, you have a little bit more option to leave. You can move. If you're on like a moving vehicle, you can't just jump off a moving vehicle. At the same time, when you're on public transport, there might be other protections in place, because you have, if it's a bus, there is a bus driver there. There might be other riders there. So it's kind of a give and take, but in general, I would not say it's more risky on public transport than out on the street. They're kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah, and you're currently working with Auckland Transport on safety initiatives. What kind of time frame were you looking at there? When are you hoping that some of your new ideas and initiatives might be implemented?
Yeah, well, I'm sorry to disappoint. I can't give a specific timeline outside of my control, but I can say that I have been working with Auckland Transport over the last about year. And the reason why you haven't seen anything like bright and flashy and like huge changes right away is because Auckland Transport's wanting to do it right. They're not just wanting to be able to say, oh, we did this, without actually having the systems in place behind the scenes to back that up. So they're taking a systematic approach to make sure that they have those systems in place. They've cataloged what's already there and are starting to put out communications for that. They're also exploring options for adding additional measures, and then making sure that as they're designing those, we're getting input from a diverse community of riders. The hope is next year you'll start seeing things. I'd feel comfortable saying next year in 2026.
That was a 95 BFM podcast. Support 95 BFM with a B card. Go to 95bfm.com/signup.